It is hard, actually, to imagine a time in Jewish history, and even in world history, when not only Yerushalayim was not a central part of our worship of Hashem, but its very identity and the very concept of Yerushalayim as being the chosen city by Hashem was actually unknown to the world and to the Jewish people. In fact, it will take nearly 3,000 years from creation for Yerushalayim as the capital city of the Jewish people, as the makom, the place which is chosen for the Beis HaBechira, to actually be revealed to the world. And the person who will reveal Jerusalem to the world is David HaMelech. But all of early mankind, even our Avot, Bnei Yisrael in the desert, Moshe Rabbeinu, even in Yahushua and Shoftim, Yerushalayim is unknown. The word Yerushalayim is actually mentioned some 700 times in the Nach, in the Nevi'im and the Kesuvim, but it is never mentioned even once in the Torah, in the Chamisha Chumashei Torah. The only reference, so to speak, to a place, an ideal place, which Hashem will choose to rest his Shechina, is in Sefer Devarim. There is an expression mentioned in some form or another around 20 times, and that is our source number one. In Devarim, Perek Yud-Beis, Pasuk Yud-Dalet, it is the first mention, Ki im b'makom asher yachar Hashem, v'achad shvatacha, sham ta'ala olosacha, v'sham ta'aseh kol asher anochem mitzavacha. So this is it. This is the only reference in all of Torah, Chamisha Chamishei Torah, to an ideal place, a makom, asher yivchar Hashem, a place which will be chosen by God. Now, obviously, the question is why? Why is Yerushalayim kept under this veil of mystery? Why does Hashem feel it necessary not to reveal their concept of Yerushalayim or call Yerushalayim by its name in all of these many thousands of years? So there are many attempts to answer this question, and the first attempt that we will look at is one by the Rambam in Mor Nebuchim, source number two. Look at the end of the first sentence with the two words, Va'asher lo. Va'asher lo hisfa'ar ba'torah v'lo nizkar ba'prat. He's talking about Yerushalayim. Aval l'mazalav v'amar el hamakom asher yivchar Hashem. Rambam is acknowledging here what we just laid out, the strange mystery that the Torah never names Yerushalayim by name and merely refers to it with this strange reference, this strange hint, Hamakom Asher Yivchar Hashem, the place that God will choose. Yesh bo etzli shalosh chachmos. So the Rambam has three reasons why the Torah does this, engages in this mystery. האחד מהם שלא יחזיק בו האומות וילחמו עליו מחמה חזקה כשידעו שזה המקום מהארץ הוא תכלס התורה. The first reason is vis-a-vis the non-Jews of the world. They will launch a war and they will all fight to occupy this great city. Everyone will know this was the most holy place that God will choose and all of the non-Jews will war over it. והשנית שלא יפתידוהו מי שהוא בידם עתה וישפסוהו בכל יכולתם. Conversely, maybe the non-Jews who are residing there, if they discovered and if they knew that they were residing in Yerushalayim, Yer HaKodesh, and that this, in fact, was the place that God will choose, that they would destroy it. They would seek to annihilate it. And another interpretation of this piece of the Rambam is that actually, how would they destroy it? Not physically, but spiritually. They would sort of infest this place, Yerushalayim, with so much of a desire that it would annihilate any possibility for future Kedusha. והשלישית, והיא החזקה שבהם. But the third reason and the strongest of the three, שלא יבקש כל שיבת היוסו בנחלסו ולמשל בו, והיה נופל עליו מן המחלוקת. And the third reason that the Rambam says the Torah keeps the identity of Yerushalayim a mystery is simply vis-a-vis the Jews themselves, that there shouldn't be machlokas amongst the Jews. The last time I was here, on the Joshua Yom Rishon, I was speaking to you about Yosef HaTzadik. And we know the disaster that ensued amongst the Shvatim, amongst the brothers, when one of them, Yosef, receives the Ksonas Pasim and the others do not, right? And the rest is history. So too, if the concept of Yerushalayim was known to mankind from the creation of man, then it would have been the subject of Machlokas all along. Rather, what will happen is that a Shevet, after the Kibbutz V'Chiluk, after all of the Shvatim have settled in their portions, it will be revealed to that Shevet that Yerushalayim just happens to fall out in their Nachla. And this is really the Rambam's strongest reason to prevent Machlokas amongst the Jews. Now, this is one theory, this is the Rambam's theory of why Yerushalayim is kept in this veil of mystery, but there are other theories as well. And two other theories which I would like to visit today are similar to one another, and they're based on the work of Harav Yitzchak Levy from Yeshivat Har Etzion, who actually has 32 shiurim on the website devoted just to this topic, Jerusalem in the Bible. And it is absolutely a magnificent piece of scholarship, and I encourage all of you, if you're interested in this subject, to really commit yourselves to going through all 32. I must admit I did not. I started preparing my shiur, and then someone told me about this, and then I was a little late to the game. But I definitely used a lot of his ideas. And the second major source for my preparation today was a beautiful shiur that I heard from Rabbi Leff, the Rav of Moshe Matityahu, who has a beautiful shiur about the concept of cities in general. Not Yerushalayim, but cities and tzibur. What is a tzibur? And you know that he created this tzibur Moshe Matityahu. So the two of them have these beautiful expositions on cities, on communities, and particularly on Yerushalayim. And what Rav Levy and also Rav Breuer actually maintains, is that the reason why Hashem keeps Yerushalayim a secret from the Jews and from the world is that, unlike in the Gan Eden, in which man was created on a set stage, everything was done for him, and there was no work involved, unlike that time in history, when that was our ideal makom, that was our ideal place to serve God, the Gan, the garden, Yerushalayim, in a post-expulsion from Gan Eden, is going to be an ideal place that we must earn. And how will we earn it? How will we work for it? How will we attain the bracha and the matana, the gift of Yerushalayim? Through a development, a two-pronged development. On the one hand, mitzvahs bein adam l'makom. On the other hand, mitzvahs bein adam l'chavero. Rav Levy will emphasize the concept of mitzvahs bein adam l'chavero, and really, he will talk about how Yerushalayim is known to be ir shachubra la yachdav, a city which unifies people. But in order to get the blessing of the unity of Jerusalem, we ourselves must be unified. And this, of course, involves mitzvahs bein adam l'chavero. In other words, we must work on ourselves for the first 3,000 years of human history to be so unified and to be a single unit called Bnei Yisrael that we are worthy of entrance into Yerushalayim. But even though the Torah keeps Yerushalayim a mystery, and keeps its location a mystery, and keeps the concept of Yerushalayim a mystery, early mankind will always, from the beginning of time, from Adam and Chava, will always be in search of an ideal place. Without knowing this promise, ki im b'makom asher yibchar Hashem, which Moshe tells Bnei Yisrael 20 times, in Sefer Devarim, nevertheless, mankind intuitively, instinctively, is searching and searching for the ideal place to worship God. And today, what I would like to do is to analyze this journey through time, this journey through biblical times, and then bring that journey toward Jerusalem into our own life and see how it applies to us as well. And so in order to take the journey throughout Torah, to see how man really from the outset, from the get-go, was always searching for this ideal place to worship Hashem, let us start. Source number 3, the journey begins, and we have early mankind's search for the ideal place. Now, as I said, when Adam is created, where is he created? In a Gan. Plan A for God is that man will serve him in Gan Eden. And the only task of man in this Gan Eden is la'avda u'l-shamra. And Rabbi Lech interprets avoda. The only avoda was the avoda shabalev, tefillah, the avoda of learning Torah. The avoda is also always equivalent to karbanos. Adam's sole task in life was to learn Torah, was to develop a relationship with Hashem. That was it. And yet, man cannot sustain this relationship. Man abuses the garden in which he is. Man has not worked for anything that is there. He hasn't earned anything. He is created last of creation. He is placed upon a set stage, all prepared for him. And man falls. After he falls, what is the next ideal place? What is plan B for God? What does he decide the next place will be for humankind to develop? Let's look at the pasuk. Bereishis, Perek Gimel, Pasuk Chaf Gimel. Ve'yashalchehu Hashem Elokim migan Eden, la'avod es ha'adama asher lukach nisham. Now, plan B is the adama. I gave you everything in the Gan Eden, but now I'm going to make you into the worker, the tiller of the land. You came from the land, and you're going to have to learn how to develop a relationship with the land. And in a sense, we know that this is an onus, we know that this is a punishment, but it is also a gift which God gives man. God has now empowered man to be his partner in creation. Okay, man's, the male punishment is to be the farmer. The female punishment, so to speak, is that she has to go through labor pains. But that's also a process of creation, of creating human life. And so man and woman, mankind now, becomes God's partners in creation, but the process of creation will not be the set stage for us. It will no longer be that gone existence. Now it will be something we have to earn. Now it will be something that we have to work hard at in order to live ideally. And so, Pasuk Chaf Dalet, Vayigarish Echa Adam Vayashkin Mikedem Magan Eden. Okay, so we started with our ideal place as the Gan. After the Gan, the ideal place is the Adama. It is the land. We know that the Torah specifically states who was the first farmer. It could have been Adam, but it's interesting that the Torah never actually tells us that Adam becomes that first farmer. The first farmer, the Oved Adama, is Cain. And Cain is the next person on our journey toward Jerusalem whose life we will analyze. Source number 4 in Bereishis Perek Dalet. Pasukid Aleph talks about Cain's sin. So Adam and Chava have a sin and they are expelled, but so too Cain commits a sin and he is expelled. So his reality was the reality of being the Oved Adamah. He lived the land, he worked the land, he fulfilled this piece of human history to be the farmer. But what does Hashem say to him after he kills his brother Hevel? Va'ata, arur ata min ha'adama, asher patata espiha lakachas estimei achicha miyadecha. And now, you will be cursed from the land. So, at first, man is cursed and expelled from the Gan into the land. Now, there's a new level of expulsion, where we're even expelled from the land itself, from the adama. And why? Because you abused the land. The land was a life source until now. It was the life source of your father. It is from the dust of the earth that I created humanity that gave birth to you. And then it was a life source for you. You were a farmer. You know very well that when you tilled the land, when you worked it, it brought forth sustenance. It supported you and your family. You ate from the land. But what did you do? You abused the land. Instead of making it still a life source, you made it a source of death. And you covered up the blood of your brother, you buried him in the land, and you have now sullied the earth. And therefore the land will spit you out and reject you from being privileged to be the Oved Adama. And what is the ideal place now, after this expulsion? Kis avodas ha'adama lo tosif teis kocha lach na v'nad tihye ba'aretz. Pasuk B says, even if you try, if you attempt to still be a farmer and still till the land as you have until now, it will not be fruitful pursuit for you. Where is your place now, Cain? Navinad. You will be a wanderer. So we start in a Gan, we move to the Adama. We move from the Adama, and now we are actually in what place? In no place. We are placeless. And placelessness is probably the worst punishment of all. It is a horrible thing never to be able to establish roots, never to be able to be productive, never to be able to stand still, to always be on the run, to always be pursued. And what does Cain say? How does he react? Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vayomar Cain El Hashem Gadol Avoni Minso. He recognizes this punishment is too great to bear. Man needs a place to serve God from. This is what all of humanity has been searching for. And of course, there are these very sad midrashim that describe Adam, and this is what I referred to before. It never tells us that Adam actually becomes himself a farmer, just as a Cain becomes a farmer. And there's sort of an implication that Adam was sort of in this crisis. After he was expelled from the Gan, there's a midrash that says all he did, Yomam Valayla, was try and search and find a way to re-enter the garden, re-enter the Gan. And yet, he could not do this. And ultimately, he does move on to have children, and then he does move on after the Cain and Hevel episode to have more children. But in the beginning, he is sort of paralyzed from grief because he has been expelled from this ideal makom of the Gan. But now, Cain, who sins again, is expelled again from any place, and he is placeless. And what does he say in Pasuk Yadalit? Hein garash, source 4, Pasuk Yadalit, Hein garash yosi hayom me'apin ha'adama, mipanecha asaser v'hayisi na v'nad ba'aretz v'haya kol motzi yahargini. I am going to be a marked man, and I will constantly be on the run. Okay. Rav Lev points out, these two sins, the first sins in world history, one of Adam and Chava being a sin bin Adam l'makom. You were given a divine command, you messed up the divine command. This is a defiance of subjugation, of the subjugation of yourself to Hashem. That is a sin bin Adam l'makom. Two, Cain's sin was the first sin bin Adam l'chaviru. You murder your own brother, you don't take responsibility for him. This is a sin bin Adam l'chaviru. For Rav Lev, therefore, these become the two prerequisites for entry and for the discovery and for the revelation of the ideal place. The ideal place that Hashem will choose will only be earned through a development of our Bein Adam L'Makom and a development of our Bein Adam L'Chaviro. We will not enter Yerushalayim. We will not be Zocha or worthy of a Yerushalayim until we can be mitaken these two sins of Adam and Cain. Let's move onward. Very fascinating reaction that Cain has to his punishment. In Bereishis Perek Dalet, right after he has this conversation with God, God giving him his punishment, Pasuk Tes Zayin, Vayeti Cain Lelefni Hashem, Vayeshev Be'eretz Nod Kidmas Eden. Oh, this is interesting. The man whose punishment was Navanad is now next word Vayeshev. What's the next verb, the next action in his life? He's settling. Oh, okay. He has a child named Chanoch. Vayehi bone ear. Vayekrashim ha'ir kashim v'no Chanoch. Fascinating. Cain, very defiantly, stands up to God's punishment. God punishes him. You will be placeless. Not only does Cain not listen, but Cain becomes the first city planner in world history. He founds a city. There is no more opposite state of being, of placelessness, than to be a city founder, than to build a city. Now, fascinatingly, we might see this as chutzpah on the one hand, but on the other hand, the Malbim actually sees this as an act of tshuva. He says, Cain really came to regret what he did. And in, as an inverse of saying, Hashem or Achi Anochi, am I my brother's keeper, as an inverse of the selfishness that he showed to humanity, the callousness that he showed to other human beings, he seeks to undo that callousness by dafka creating something which involves a city, which involves the multiplicity of human beings all living in harmony with one another. Because we know that if people live next to each other, but they don't work together, they don't have a city, they just have chaos. They just have warring individuals who cannot get along. So this is actually a very noble effort on Cain's part. Look at the next pasuk. Vayivali v'chanoch es irad. And Chanoch gives birth to Irad. V'irad yalad es mechuyael. Mechuyael yalad es mitushael. Mitushael yalad es lamach. Now, as we know, the Torah does not waste its words. The words of the Torah are very precious. There are a lot of fascinating midrashim, therefore, which explain these names, some of these very strange names of the future generations. What are they about? Chanoch is the name of Chanoch. Cain's intention was to be mechanech himself, was to be metaken his own midos, to educate people how to get along one with one another, to coexist peacefully in a city. But unfortunately, Chanoch gives birth to a next generation, and that generation was Irad. And Irad is a contraction of the two words, Irad, a rebellious city. This city experiment on Cain's part was a disaster. I mean, let's face it, how many of us actually remember that Cain goes on to found a city named Chanoch? When does the Ir Chanoch ever appear again in world history? It really doesn't. It's a failed city. It's a city that's merely a blip on the radar screen of world history. We never hear from it again. Irad gives birth to another generation called Mechuyael, which is a contraction of the two words Mechuyael. They tried to erase God's name. They were rebellious people. Mechuyael gives birth to another generation, Metushael, from a contraction of the two concepts of Tash, Kel, Tash, El. They were trying to weaken God. This was a city that was full of arrogance. This was not a city that was a positive innovation in the human march toward progress, toward resettling the world, toward making the world into a better place. The city was an utter failure. So much so that in source number 6 in Bereshit Perek Vav, Vayar Hashem ki Rabba Ra'as Ha'adam Ba'aretz V'chol Yetzer Machshavos Libo Rak Ra Kol Hayom. God comes to regret creation as it is. He is saddened because man has become completely corrupt. Vayinachem Hashem ki Asas Ha'adam Ba'aretz V'yis'atzidiv Libo. God is depressed. God regrets this creation. Vayomar Hashem Emche Es Ha'adam Asher Barasi Me'al Pnei Ha'adama. Okay? Remember, our new reality was the Adama. We went from the Gan to the Adama. But it is man who pushes it. It's Cain who takes the Adama to the next level. He decides that the next ideal place for mankind to serve God and to exist is the Ir. But God really never gave him permission to do this. This was an Ir that was built. This was a city that was built in defiance of God's decision. God's decision was that the ideal place of worship would be the Adama. And here, later on in Perek Vav, Hashem is still having man on the face of the earth. Me'al Pnei Ha'adama. It was Cain who sort of rushes the developments of human history, who sort of decides on his own accord that this is the place, the next ideal place for man to serve God. Now we're going to move on to Bereshit Perek Vav, which is, of course, Hashem's designation of Noach to be the only surviving man in history, him, his family, and certain specimens of nature and certain animals. You will be the only ones to survive. Look at Bereshit Perek Vav, still in source number 6, Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayomar Elokim Lenoach, Kate Kol Basar Lefanai, Ki Malaha Arts Hamas Mepneim Vehini Mashchisam Asa Arets. I am sickened from man as I know it, and I am going to destroy earth as we know it. Now, the ideal place for mankind, as dictated by God, is no longer the Adama. It is no longer the Aretz. Now, man's ideal place of worship for God, and the only way that mankind itself will actually survive, is the Teva. Okay? A Teva is a very unusual creation. And it's a little mysterious. Was it a boat? Was it a submarine? Was it floating on the water? Was it floating in the water? But regardless, the Teva we know was actually, it was a capsule. It was a completely enclosed creation. It had no windows. It merely had this strange light source that was translucent, so it admitted light, but it wasn't transparent. You couldn't see out. And it's a very fascinating architectural metaphor for the life of Noah, that his mission in life was not necessarily to be out there changing the world, but to be inside, preserving the only strain of goodness that remains in the world. His mission in life, his ideal place of service of God, was inside, closed off from the rest of the world. And I am always very proud to acknowledge that Noah is the first architect that is named in the Torah, and I am an architect, so I like Noah, and I like the Teva, even though I don't design boats. Okay. Now, in source number 7, in Bereshit Yud Aleph, we have the next stage of human history. This stage of human history is post the flood, where we do survive the Mabul, and the world does recreate itself, and yet, unfortunately, that strain of bad still exists. Because who are these people we're going to meet in Perek Yud Aleph? We're going to meet the Dar Haflaga. Pasuk Gimel, Vayomu Ish Al Rehu, Hava No Bana Levinim, V'nisrafa L'Sreifa, V'tehilahem, Halavina La'evin, V'hachemer Hayalahem Chomer. Obviously, mankind has really marched along in its progress, right? And more sophisticated techniques of building technology, you know, mortar and bricks are being developed. So mankind is marching along in its own progress. And yet, What does this particular generation want to do? Or did they decide for themselves, incidentally, that the next best, most ideal makom, an ideal place of worship of God, or for the existence of mankind is? Pasuk Dalet, Vayomru, Hava nivna lanu ir umigdal. Let us build another city. They want to be city builders also. But not only just a city, we want a city with a migdal, a city with a tower, with a skyscraper. Verosho bashamayim v'naaseh lanu shem, pen nafutz al pnei kol haaretz. Okay, so I always get a little chuckle out of this, because being that it is, I am an architect, I say, oh, you know, this is biblically, we have the hubris of the architect has biblical origins here. An architect never really just merely wants to build a building or a city. You want to create a name for yourself. You want to create the tallest building in the world. You want everyone to look at you and to see your accomplishments. So here it is, the hubris of the architect, right laid out for us in the Torah itself. And this is a very purposefully worded pasuk that makes us realize that, yes, this was a building project at the initiative of mankind. There was no God part in this. There was no God giving the green light. You know what, mankind? It is now time to build a city. It is now time to build a city with great buildings, with great architectural achievements. No. This is God deciding, you know, deigning to come and check out the building project of this Der HaFlaga, of this Migdal Babel. Okay. Vayomer Hashem, Him Amachad, V'Safa Achat, V'Chulam, V'Zeh Achilam, La'asos, V'Ata Lo Yibetzer Mehem, Mikol Asher Yazmu La'asos. But this is a corrupt endeavor. And God therefore decides, this is not the way that I want you to serve me. This is not the place that I consider to be the most ideal. And I will punish you in that I will create chaos on your building site. And I still chuckle at this punishment because it's still true. Let's think of Ground Zero. Let's think of the debacle, the politicians, the construction workers, all the different voices of all the warring architects, everyone speaking a different language. The punishment of Migdal Babel is still alive and well because, in fact, it's very hard to build skyscrapers and it's very hard to decide what is the most ideal way in which a site should be constructed. And so, mankind, unfortunately, is still failing. The Elfet Shimoni in source number 8, I will not read inside, but basically I will say, you may wonder, why was Hashem resistant to progress? You might say that building cities and founding cities is better than, you know, like what should we have done? Remain this backward society? But basically the Elfet Shimoni brings down this discussion of the rabbis who say, it is amazing how man can take something good, a place with good intentions, and wreck it and ruin it by putting into it his own ego, so the place of good intentions becomes a place of bad, becomes a place of mankind only, with no sense of God. And remember those symbolic names of the city of Hanoch that all spoke about, yes, it was a march of progress, and yes, there was a development of humankind's, you know, place of worship for God, and yet it was done with such arrogance that it essentially rendered a city that started off with good intentions, a city named Hanoch, Ir Hanoch, about Hanoch, and it really wrecked this experiment. And so, really, what we derive from this is that the only way to exist in this world and to understand the ideal place and to discover and uncover the ideal place in this world is that it must be divinely dictated. And therefore, let's look at source number 9 on the next page, Bereishis Perakid Beis. Who's the next character whose life we will visit on this journey toward the ideal place? It is the life of Abraham Avinu. Vayomer Hashem el Abraham, lech lecha me'artecha u'mimeladetcha u'mibeis avicha el ha'aretz asher aracha. Abraham overturns human history until this point. Every other person until now, including Adam, Cain, Noah, the Der HaFlaga, everyone is trying to discover this ideal place to serve Hashem. But in fact, none of them are successful. Okay, Noah is successful to a certain extent. But what happens now with Abraham? He offers a completely alternative model for the service, for the ideal service of Hashem. What does Abraham teach us? And really, it's divinely dictated. What is it? Lech lecha. It's a journey. The best place to serve God is on a journey. You will be moving. You will be on the move. You will not be settled.
Pasuk Ches, Vayatik Misham Hahara Mikedem Levesel, Vayet Ahalo, Vesel Miyam, etc. What is the defining architectural metaphor of Abraham Avinu's life? The Ohel. As opposed to the spatial place that defines all of the people before him, the Ohel, the tent. And what was Abraham Avinu's tent like? It was open on all four sides. It meant that he was constantly on the move. He was constantly open to other people. He was, you know, preaching God's message of monotheism to the world by taking a journey. Now, this is a divinely dictated journey. He is told to do this. But we know that Abram is really the first successful Eved Hashem because he listens to God. He goes on this journey, and he doesn't try to sink roots and settle down. He doesn't try to build a city with a tower. You could well have imagined an alternate, you know, way, approach for Abraham Avinu to spread the message of monotheism could have very well been, I'm going to found a city called Abraham. I'm going to build a tower called the Abraham Tower. It's going to be the tallest tower in the world. All the people from all over the world will try to, you know, make a pilgrimage to see my magnificent tower. And within this tower, I'll do all of my kirub, I'll spread my message to God. But he doesn't choose to do that because that's not what God told him to do. God told him, get yourself on a journey. Get yourself your tent and pitch it wherever you go. You will be on this journey and you will be traveling for a long time. Now, it is just, as a fascinating aside, a very unusual comparison between Noah's architectural metaphor, the teva, completely enclosed, and Abraham's architectural, you know, metaphor of the open tent. And it really, these two structures bespeak the differences in their mission. Noah was told to preserve, to conserve, to conserve, to shun the rest of the world. And Abraham was told to engage with the rest of the world. And we know that, yes, there are some people who say Noah ish tzadik b'doro, maybe he was only in his time, and maybe in comparison to Abraham, he wasn't as great. But we have to understand that God, we just read it in the text itself, God commanded Noah to live like this. And it just forms an interesting comparison to our times that there are different ways to be a Yid. There are different ways to be a Jew. Some of us will engage in the world, but some of us will preserve, will conserve, will shun the rest of the world. And we have to understand, we have to appreciate, you know what? These are different ways. These are two different approaches. One is not necessarily better than the other. There are different ways to be a from Jew. Just an interesting aside. Okay, now, you may wonder, was Abram the only successful person in the world? Was Abram the only true Eved Hashem? And you may also be interested to know that Abraham, of all of our Avot, well, Abraham and then Yitzchak, are the only ones of our Avot who actually do come very, very close to Yerushalayim. Whether or not they knew that Yerushalayim existed, whether or not they actually knew that there was even this concept of an ideal place where God, where we will serve God, is unclear. There are some pretty strong evidence that they did know, and we're going to read those sources now. Let's look at the next source within number 9, in Bereishis Perek Yud-Aleph, at a very unusual encounter in the life and times of Abraham Avinu, when he meets this melech called Malki Tzedek, Perek Yud-Aleph, Pasuk Yud-Ches. U'Malki Tzedek melech shalem, hotzi lechem v'yayin v'hu kohen l'kel elyon. Let me just give you a quick background. This is after Abraham fights the war of the 4 and the 5 kings, and he is successful. And he is greeted by this man named Malki Tzedek melech shalem. So all of them are farshim, roundly agree, that shalem, this ir shalem, the city shalem, is actually Yerushalayim. And Malki Tzedek, who was he? He was Shem, the son of Noah. The son of Noah, who you'll see in source number 10, was blessed by Noah. Vayomer in Perek Tes Pasuk Chafav, Vayomer, this is Noah speaking, Baruch Hashem Elokei Shem. God, Hashem is the God of Shem. V'hikanan Eved Lamo. Yachta Lekim Liyefet V'yishkon Ba'ahalei Shem. Shem is identified as an honest servant of God. And it is interesting to realize that the Jewish people do not emanate from Shem. The Jewish people emanate from Avraham. And as we all know, the concept of the B'nai Noah as being non-Jews who righteously serve God, Shem is actually one of the B'nai Noah, literally. He is not a Jewish person, as we understand Judaism, and yet he is absolutely considered Malki Tzedek, the Melech who stands for righteousness, who rules in a city called Shalem, which means wholeness and unity, and therefore, he is, and still, and yet, he is this righteous servant of God. And interestingly, we know that Yaakov Avinu, when he runs away from his home, goes to learn with shame. So this Malki Tzedek, he was the Rosh Hashiva, right? And he was the king here, he was a Kohen, at the end of the Kohen, the Kal Yom, he was quite the guy, he was quite the man, very accomplished person. And yet, he is this B'nai Noach, he is this non-Jew who is the first person privileged to live in what will ultimately become Yerushalayim. The Mefarshim and the Midrashim actually have a heyday in trying to understand this strange encounter. Why does Malki Tzedek bring Avraham lechem and yayin? And they say these were references to the lechem hapanim that would ultimately be served in this place, Yerushalayim, in the Beis HaMikdash. And the yayin was a reference, a symbolic reference to the yayin eslechem that was poured, all the libations, in relation to all the karbanos. So in other words, what the Midrashim are telling us is that what was this encounter all about? It was about Malki Tzedek actually teaching Avraham Avinu the secrets of the Beis HaMikdash. Communicating to Avraham Avinu, this is it. This is what will be done. Kohen Lekel Elyon, he's telling him there will be priests in the nation, and they will serve God, and this is how they will serve God. And then the Pesukim go on to see that he blesses Avraham in all of his future endeavors. It's a fascinating little encounter in the life of Avraham, but it actually, there is no proof that Avraham was standing in Yerushalayim or that this occurrence actually happened within Yerushalayim. It just says, Malki Tzedek, Melech Shalem, he was the king of Yerushalayim, is now coming out to greet Avraham wherever they are. But Avraham Avinu does himself, with his own two feet, make it not only into Yerushalayim, but onto Har HaMoriah, which is the mountain upon which the Beis HaMikdash well stands. Unfortunately, the next three sources of Maishir are not on the sheet, so I'll tell you where they are if you want to write them down, and I'm going to read them to you. When does Avraham make it to Har HaMoriah? Of course, at the end of Parshas Vayirah, in Perek, Chaf Beis, we have the Akedas Yitzchak. What happens? Hashem says to Avraham, Kachna es binchas yechidcha asher ahavta es yitzchak v'lech lecha al eretz ha-moriah. Again, the last and final test of Avraham involves a journey. He is still not allowed to settle. And this journey, of course, will be the most arduous journey of all. And this journey will be the most tragic journey of all. And this journey will be the sacrifice of his one, his only, his beloved son, Yitzchak. And yet, what is Abraham's reaction in Pasukim of Vayashkim Avraham Baboker? He wakes up early with alacrity, and the Mefarshim tell us this implies his rizos, to do mitzvahs, to do the commands of God. Vayachavoshes hamaro, he himself harnesses his donkey in preparation for this trip. Vayikachashmina Arabi told us, Yitzchak beno vayivaka itim, etc. Vayaken, vayakam, vayelech el hamakom, asher amar lo elokim. He's going to where? Hamakom, the place. The place that God told him to go to. And this is definitely a linkage, a verbal linkage with Hamakom Asher Yibchar B'Hashem. This is it. This is the place. Finally, for the first time in human history, we have the first man in human history, in world history, approaching the place, the ideal place of the worship of God. Vayom hashlishi vayisa Avraham es inav vayar es hamakom merachok. And on the third day of this journey, it says, vayisa Avraham es inav vayar. This is a lashon yechid, it's singular. It was only Avraham in the travel party. It was him, the servants, Yitzchak. None of the rest of them saw this place. It was only Avraham who was on the madriga, on the level of worthiness to perceive, to understand that this is the place. This is hamakom asher yivchar Hashem. And so, of course, we know that Avraham ascends the mountain. He goes up Har HaMoriah. He makes it to the top. He sets up the Mizbeach. And, of course, the Mefarshim tell us in the Rambam, in that same piece of the Nebuchadnezzar beforehand, he talks about how this place where he erects his Mizbeach is the Kodesh Kodashim itself. This is where the Kodesh Kodashim itself will stand ultimately when the Beis HaMikdash is built. And so what happens? He attempts to kill, to sacrifice Yitzchak, and the angel from Shemayim calls, stops him, and Hashem calls to him, Avraham, Avraham, and he says, Hineni, here I am, and he says, do not sacrifice your son. So in his zeal to fulfill and to worship God, to fulfill God's command in some way, instead he sacrificed the Ayal. And then, interestingly, what does Avraham Avinu call this place? He calls it, Vayikra Avraham Shim Hamakom Hahu Hashem Yireh. Asher yeyamar hayom ba'har Hashem yireh. This is the mountain upon which God will be seen. upon which God's glory will be revealed. And interestingly, there's a beautiful medrash that says that Hashem could not choose between Abraham's name for this place, Hashem Yireh, and Melchizedek's name for this place, Shalem. And so he combines the two names into Yireh, and Shalem become Yerushalayim. And so Abraham and Melchizedek together, these two early, most ideal servants of God, one the Bnei Noach, one the Jew, as we know it, right? They together have designated the name for Hamakom, because Hashem himself does not use the word Yerushalayim. He does not promise that there will be a place called Yerushalayim. Hashem endowed man with the capability, these two men, Abraham and Melchizedek, with the capability to name this holy place themselves. Okay. And so, Abraham and Yitzhak Avinu therefore become the first two human beings who actually, we have textual proof, have ascended the mountaintop, have ascended to the place of Yerushalayim itself, to the place of the Beis HaBechira, to the place of the Kodesh Kodashim. And yet, you would think that after this crowning achievement of Abraham Avinu, that he would be standing on the mountaintop and that he would scream it to the world, call it from the mountaintops literally, and tell the world, this is it. I have achieved the greatest service of God. I have achieved, you know, I have undone the defiance of the Bein Adam L'Makom of Adam and Chava, who defied God's commands. I listened to God's commands. And now, we in the world, in humanity, as we know it, we are worthy of the revelation of Yerushalayim. Here I am, standing in the Makom HaKodesh itself. And yet he does not. And why doesn't he do this? This goes back to this concept that we established with Kayin, and this concept we established with Dar HaFlaga. Unless you're specifically dictated to by Hashem to announce to the world that this is the place for this is the ideal place for mankind to worship, you're not given this permission. And if you attempt to do this, you will fail. And therefore, Abraham wisely chooses to descend the mountain and to continue living his life in the way that God told him. He was not granted permission to announce to the world, nor was Melchizedek given permission to announce to the world. Melchizedek communicates these secrets merely, you know, of what the worship will be in this place to one person only, to Abraham alone, but neither of these two Avadim of Hashem were actually given permission to actually reveal Jerusalem to the world. Okay, the next one of our Avos, who actually we have no proof comes close or comes into Yerushalayim, is Yaakov Avinu. And there are two very strange episodes in the life of Yaakov Avinu that hint at him feeling that he was close to the place that Hashem will choose. The first episode is when he runs away from his house and he goes to Beis El, and he goes onto this mountain and he assembles those stones. And in the morning the stones turn into that one stone. And at night he had this enigmatic dream of the ladder with the ascending angels, the descending angels. And he wakes up in the morning and what does he say? Zeshar HaShemayim. He realizes he's on holy ground. But where is he? He is not on Har HaMoriah. He is in Beis El, which is not Yerushalayim. Okay, that's one episode in his life, which is a strange episode, and of course deserves many shiurim of its own that I'm not going to give you right now, but just bear it in mind. The second episode in Yaakov Avinu's life that I would like to share with you is actually an even more telling episode where he actually feels that after he has run away from his home, after he has survived living in the house of Laban, after he has successfully built the first Klal Yisrael, the 12 Shvatim that he gives birth to himself, he alone of all the Avot has accomplished this. His father, his grandfather, they were not successful in creating Shvatim, the Shivtei Ka, okay? But he has. After all of this, Yaakov actually feels that the time is now, that he has fulfilled the Bris Bein Habsarim that Hashem gave to Avraham Avinu, and he feels, you know what, Ki Ger Yezaracha Be'eretz Lo Lahem, I lived through this. I lived through the house of Laban. I survived the encounter with my brother Esau. I have built Klal Yisrael. What does he feel that it is time for? He feels that it is time for the revelation of Yerushalayim, for the building of the Beis HaMikdash, and that it is actually time for Mashiach. When does he feel this? It says in Bereishis Perek Lamed Gimel, at the end of Parshas Vayishlach, Vayavo Yaakov Shalem Ir Shechem, Asher Be'eretz Kanan Bevo Mipadan Aram, Vayichan Es Pnei Ha'ir. Okay, so these are very important words to us because we know what Shalem means. We just learned it in the episode of Malkut Tzedek. Shalem is a reference to Yerushalayim. Now, obviously, even though Yaakov had learned in the yeshiva of Shem with him for many years, apparently he does not know the exact geographical location of Yerushalayim. He does not know the exact location of where the ideal makom for Bnei Yisrael to worship God will be. And erroneously, he makes an incorrect cheshbon in thinking that here, Ir Shechem, where he encamps in front of Ayechanas Pnei Ha'ir, he encamps in front of this city, he thinks that this is going to be the place, the ideal place for the worship of God. Okay? Vayiken eschakas hasadeh asher natasham ahalo. He's still in this tent-like existence, but he wants to transfer the ohel into the city, into the ear. He wants to stop traveling. He wants to stop running. He wants to settle. And so what does he do? He purchases this portion of land upon which he settles. Biyad b'nei chaymara b'yishchem b'mei kesita. The Torah is very specific always with our avos to delineate that they purchase the land, who they purchase it from, and how much they pay. The same thing happens before with Avram Avinu in the purchase of Ma'aras HaMachpelah. Vayatziv sham mizbeach vayikra lo kel elokei Yisrael. He goes so far as to make a mizbeach, just like Avraham, his grandfather, had made a mizbeach in that ideal place. He too makes a mizbeach. Now, he comes to the city Shalem. He comes whole. He feels that he has lived through the Bein Hapsarim. The time is now for moving on, for Bnei Yisrael to move on. And yet, he is incorrect. He makes a faulty cheshbon. And not only is he incorrect, but we know that very tragically, what the next episode in the life of Yaakov Avinu is the episode of Dinah. And the next episode after Dinah is the episode of Yosef. And very tragically, not only is Yaakov not worthy of establishing Klal Yisrael in a Yerushalayim, in the ideal makom to worship Hashem, but he himself with his own eyes sees his children go down to Egypt, to Mitzrayim. And so, the next 200 years of Klal Yisrael's existence is that of slaves in a foreign land. But Bnei Yisrael, too, are on a journey. After they exit Mitzrayim, they are on a journey. And where is the journey? What's the destination of the journey? The journey is to Yerushalayim. It's first to Eretz Yisrael. But ultimately, they should be entering Yerushalayim. And it should not take 40 years. It should take a couple days, maybe a couple weeks. There are a lot of people. They're moving slowly. But we know that tragically, we're back to our source sheet now, that tragically, what occurs, the journey ensues, Bnei Yisrael come into the desert, but what occurs, actually we're not back to our source sheet, this source is also not there. But what we have is that Bnei Yisrael, they also sin. And they're not expelled per se from where they are, but their punishment, instead of an expulsion from a place, their punishment is to remain in a place. And similar to Cain, actually, their punishment is to be na v'nah. They sin with the chaytim araglim, they speak lashon hara about the lands of Israel, and God says to them, you know what, you're not ready. The world is not ready for Eretz Yisrael to be shared, to be given to the Jews. The world is not ready for the revelation of Yerushalayim. The world is not ready because you are not ready, because you are not serving me properly. Your b'nei adam l'makom has weakened. And therefore, you need this journey. You need this extra journey. You, this generation that sins with Dibar Haaretz in Chaita Meraglin, you will die out in this desert, and your children will be the ones to enter. And it doesn't actually specify, I don't think, anywhere in the Torah, that the journey will take 40 years. But it seems, you know, very purposeful that God once again, like he sent Abraham on a journey, he sends Bnei Yisrael on a journey. Now, this journey was not necessarily a journey about anything else other than readying oneself. It becomes this incubation period for the development of the mitzvah bin Adam Lamakom. We're obviously 40 years in the desert. What were we doing? We were learning Torah. It was Moshe Rabbeinu who himself, Torah's Moshe Nisina. Moshe was the ultimate Torah teacher. He was teaching us Torah. We were learning to be God's servants properly, and also it was an incubation period for the proper development of mitzvot bein adam l'chaveiro. Now, before we go on to understand the mitzvot bein adam l'chaveiro that Bnei Yisrael did in fact achieve and excel at in the Midbar, I'd like to share with you another fascinating episode that really gets little attention in the whole story of the Chaita Meraglim, and here it is. And I want you to pay very careful attention to the Hebrew words used in the Torah to describe this episode. What occurs is the Chaitim Raglan, and then Moshe Rabbeinu transmits the message from God to the people, you are punished, you will die, this generation will die in the desert, and you will not enter the land. And what happens is that Bnei Yisrael v'yis'ablu ha'am ma'od. They are mourning. They understand, wow, we really messed up. We lost the opportunity. We're the first group in human history that was about to enter the lands of Israel and occupy the lands of Israel and live there as we rightfully should. And we've lost this opportunity. We've let it slip through our hands. V'yis'ablu. And they're mourning. And yet, there's this fascinating little group of Jews in the Midbar who decide, we're not going to take it. We're not going to listen. And what do? In Perek Yedal of Pasuk Mem, Vayashkimu Baboker, Vayalu El Rosh Ahar Lemar, Hineinu. Fascinating language here. Vayashkimu Baboker. This is actually an echo and a parallel to the whole Abraham Avinu at Har HaMoriah, the whole Akida Sifchat. Vayashkimu Baboker. He wakes up, and that's a positive to him. It shows that Jesus the alacrity to do God's commands. They woke up early in the morning. They're going to do this. And what did they do? Like Abraham, Vayahalu al Rosh Ahar. They ascend the mountain. They're going up the mountain. This is not Har HaMoriah. This is some mountain that divides them from entering the lands of Israel. Okay? Lemar, Hineinu. They say Hineinu, just like Abraham said Hineini. Here I am, ready to accomplish what you have given us as a command. Va'alinu el hamakom asher amar Hashem kichatanu. This is full vita, this is full confession. They're saying, kichatanu, we messed up, we sinned, it really is our fault, and we're really, really regretful, but we are not going to take no for an answer. And in this, there's a little bit of a comparison to Cain. They receive a punishment, and they defy the punishment. They were not told to go up the mountain, but they go up the mountain. They force it, they push it, they push themselves. Hineinu, we're ready to do the commands of God. To do what? To find the makom, to discover this ideal place of God. Vayomer Moshe, but Moshe says to them, Lama ze atem ovrim es pi Hashem, v'hi lo tzvach. Moshe says to them, what nobody said to Cain, what nobody said to Dar HaPlaga, what nobody said to those, to early mankind's attempt to defy their punishment, to defy the place. If God tells you you have to be in a desert, you have to be a desert, in a desert. If God tells you you're going to be Navanad, that's your place. Why are you over Mespi Hashem? Why are you defying God's will? Lo titzlach. You will not succeed. Al ta'alu ki'in Hashem bekir b'chem. He says, don't go up. And what happens, tragically? They go anyway. What does it say? There's an unusual word, an unusual Hebrew word in Pasuk Mem Dalet, Vaya'apilu la'alos el Rosh Ahar. And the article Tanakh translated it as, but they defiantly ascended. Okay, so this is Kayim. They defy their punishment. And what happens? This group of Bnei Yisrael are murdered. They are killed by the Amalekites and the Canaanites who are on the other side of the mountain, and they are defeated. Okay. Now, Bnei Yisrael, in this incubation period, they really do end up excelling at developing their Bein Adam L'Makom and at developing their Bein Adam L'Chaviro. How do we know? Well, first of all, they spend 40 years merely learning Torah. That's a good gig. I'd love to spend 40 years of my life learning Torah, but I can't afford to, okay? But they are told to, this is their job, and this is what they do. The next thing we know about Bnei Yisrael is that the encampment, and before we were using these spatial and architectural metaphors for all these different people in human history, let's talk about the spatial metaphor of Bnei Yisrael as they traveled through a desert for 40 years. We know that there was a very, very specific way in which they were supposed to encamp. They were, it says in Parshat Bamidbar, Ish al diglo ba'osos levisa ba'osam yachanu bnei Yisrael. Each shevet was in a particular place, in a particular formation. Each shevet had a degel that they used, and each shevet had a place. Mineged saviv ba'ohal moed yachanu. And so the metaphor I'd like to use, a spatial metaphor, was one of circles and concentric circles. There was the Kohen Levi Yisrael, and each one had a place. And you can just well imagine this magnificent formation of these million Jews wandering in this desert. You can imagine them moving together as a unit, all holding high their degalim, and moving together as this nation in this very particular formation, all surrounding the Ohel and the Mishkan, which also is a prominent
defining metaphor of the existence of the Jews at this point. They, like Abraham Avinu, are on a journey. And therefore, it's not time for a bias. It's not time for the Beis Hashem. It's time for merely the Ohel Moed, the Mishkan. These were temporary structures for the temporary worship of Hashem on a temporary journey. But the journey itself had to be meaningful. The journey itself, for some of us, you know, our life is just the journey, and we may not be zocha to actually see the building of the final Beis HaMikdash. Just like these people, they were not necessarily zocha. The first generation was not zocha to go into Eretz Yisrael, but the journey itself had to be a meaningful time for spiritual development, as it was. And ultimately, it's actually interesting, this is in the beginning of their encampment, source number 11, which is Shemos Perek Yotes. In the beginning of their sojourn in the desert, we're already seeing the magnificence of this encampment and the success of this development of mitzvot binaz and machaviro. When vayisu meirufidim vayavo midbar Sinai vayachanu ba midbar, and they encamped in the desert. Vayichan sham Yisrael neged hahar. And Rashi says there, why does the language switch from the plural vayachanu and they encamped to vayichan, the singular, and he encamped, to prove that they had achieved this unity? They started as this diverse multiplicity of slaves, a slave nation that was just let out of 2 centuries worth of slavery, but very, very quickly in their career, they learned how to unite. We will not be successful at this point in receiving the Torah, and in this point at standing facing this mountain, unless we come together, unified, unless we come together as a single unit. And they realize very quickly that this is the prerequisite for receiving the Torah, and ultimately this is the prerequisite for receiving the privilege of entering Eretz Yisrael. And so the journey continues. And B'nai Yisrael are privileged to enter the land of Israel in section number 4. Now in source number 12 and in source number 13, actually, source number 12 in Sefer Yehoshua, this is actually the first mention of the word Yerushalayim in all of the Tanakh. So we've lived through Chamish Chamshei Torah, and we've lived through many thousands of years of human history, of human existence. There is no Yerushalayim, there is no mention of the word Yerushalayim, and there's merely an amorphous promise of a place. And you would think that this becomes, therefore, a tremendous climax in the Torah. Here we are, we've arrived. Yehoshua, Perek Tesvav, Pasach Sam Gimel, Ve'et HaYevusi Yosha Yerushalayim, Lo Yachlu B'nei Yehudza Baho Risham, Vayeshev HaYevusi Yeth B'nei Yehudza B'Yerushalayim Ad Hayom Hazeh. Very anticlimactic. It's merely named as a city amongst many other cities that Sheva Yehuda was trying to conquer, and yet they're unsuccessful. Both in Sefer Yehoshua and a couple hundred years later in Sefer Shoftim, this Sheva Yehuda still cannot defy and take over this city called Yerushalayim that was inhabited by these people called the Yevusi. And that's it. And the Torah moves on. There's no great commotion made about the fact that this is the first mention of Yerushalayim. And we must necessarily understand this sort of silence on the Torah's part with regard to the city. The time wasn't ripe yet. It wasn't time. The world was not ready. The Jews were not ready to have Yerushalayim revealed to the world and shared to the world. The people at this point, though they were worthy, they had developed enough themselves enough to be worthy of entering Israel, they were not yet worthy enough of entering Yerushalayim and of revealing Yerushalayim's full glory to the world. But then the journey starts to come to a close when David HaMelech will reveal Yerushalayim to the world. David HaMelech lives through very, very divisive times in Bnei Yisrael. His early career is really characterized by a lot of division. There are still those very loyal to Shaul HaMelech. There are still those who are loyal to Ish-Boshet, his son, who becomes king simultaneously with the reign of David. So much so that David becomes the king only of Yehuda, and he has to reign in Hebron, which becomes his capital city, until Ish-Boshet, Shaul's son, dies, and until finally, at long last, he can see peace in his life, and all of Klal Yisrael will come to coronate him. That's where we are in the next source 14, Shmuel Beis. What happens? Vayavo kol shevti Yisrael al David Chavrona vayomer lemar hinenu atzmacha v'sarcha anachnu. Skip down to pasuk gimel. Vayavo kol zeknei Yisrael al hamelach Chavrona vayichros v'ham hamelach David bris v'chavron lefnei Hashem vayimshachu es David lemelach al Yisrael. So he's lived through some very turbulent times, times of divisiveness. You know, in all of, by the way, Sefer Yehoshua and Sefer Shoftim, Bnei Yisrael were not, you know, there's
Yerushalayim is not even a blip on their radar screen, because really their chief pursuit was kibbutz hachilah, was settling into the land. But in so doing, they sort of exited that realm of beautiful, magnificent unity, that units of people marching together in the desert. They become very much shvatim, and there's a lot of like tribal sort of divisiveness about settling my portion, not your portion. And all throughout Shoftim, there's very overt references in the Navi that talks about like intermarrying, was a term that they used, from one person marries into another Sheva. They're all Jews, and yet there is some sort of like tribal rivalry here. So we have to understand that David's coronation and ultimately his acknowledgement as the leader, the king of all of Bnei Yisrael, this is a big moment in human history. This is a big moment in Jewish history, that the people have finally come together and unanimously have chosen David HaMelech to be their king. And what is the next thing that David does immediately after being coronated by all the people finally? Shmuel Beis, Parakei, Source number 15, Vayelech HaMelech Va'anashav Yerushalayim El HaYavusi Yoshev HaAretz. It is only now that David chooses Yerushalayim, and in so doing, chooses it as his capital city, and in so doing, acknowledges that this is HaMakom, this is the place that we will ideally worship Hashem. Incidentally, this people, this group of non-Jewish people, the Yavusi, were still living in this city. It's 400 years since the beginning of Kiva Shechilah until this point. And the year that David HaMelech, of all of Sefer Yehoshua, all of Sefer Shoftim, so it's still 400 years later, and Yerushalayim is still not revealed to the world. The Jews have lived in Israel for 400 years, and yet still no Yerushalayim. This year is the year 2892. That is when David HaMelech is coronated. So it's nearly 3,000 years before any man in history is empowered to declare Yerushalayim as his capital city. Now, there are fascinating discussions in the Gemara whether or not David HaMelech actually knew that this was HaMakom HaSher Yevchar Hashem. And some people strongly maintain David didn't know. He made it up. He chose. He didn't know. And the Masorah was not handed down from generation to generation. And then there are those who maintain, particularly in the Gemara, and Zvachim says, David knew, Shmuel knew, but they didn't know exactly where. They knew that Yerushalayim was the city, but they didn't know where within the city there would be the what was Har HaBayis, and what was actually supposed to be the locale of the Beis HaMikdash. And this Harav Yitzchak Levi that I mentioned, his Shir series, actually has a very fascinating, very unusual interpretation, saying that this is an example of the divine will subjugating itself to human will. That God agrees with David's definition of the parameters and the borders, the gvulot, of Yerushalayim. That it is David who is empowered to choose Yerushalayim as the capital, and that it is David who is empowered to define its very borders. And that, you know, it's a very big statement to say that the divine will subjugates itself to David HaMelech's will. Okay? So now, there is a very fascinating episode in the life of David HaMelech where he says, this is it. I am peaceful. There is peace amongst the people. I have accomplished what I was supposed to accomplish. I won't read it inside, but source number 16, the Talmud Bavli, actually talks about how there are three mitzvahs for Bnei Yisrael when they enter the land. L'hamid l'hamelech, they have to appoint a melech, l'achriz zaro shel amalek, to destroy the zera of amalek, and that's the larger amalekites, meaning the non-Jewish occupiers of the land. V'livnos l'hem b'isa v'chira. So David feels like, okay, he knows his Gemara, he knows his halacha. He says, you know, check, we've gotten rid of the non-Jews. Check, we've appointed ourselves a unanimous king. Now we're ready for stage three. Stage three is v'livnos l'hem b'isa v'chira. We're ready to finally, you know, appoint to build the Beis HaMikdash. Look at source number 17. Vayihi ki yashav hamelech b'vis. They're at peace. My chief architectural metaphor is that I'm sitting in a house of cedars. I'm sitting in a palace, but God is sitting in a tent. That's not fair. God is with you. If you want to build the Beis HaMikdash, go ahead. David, But tragically that night, Nathan HaNavi had the Nevuah, and the Nevuah tells him, no, David may be the one to reveal Yerushalayim to the world, but he will not be the builder of the Beis HaMikdash to the world. That is a privilege that will be reserved for someone else. Ki lo yashavti bevayis miyom ha'alosi et b'nei Yisrael min Mitzrayim ba'ad ha'yom hazeh ve'ehyeh mishalich ba'ohel over Mishkan. God acknowledges his temporary existence. I was only in an ohel, I was only in something temporary, I was only in a Mishkan, and that's been my reality until now. That's how you've worshipped me, b'nei Yisrael, and it's okay. Because right now, the time is still not the time for the revelation of Yerushalayim in its most glorious crowning achievement, its moment of the Beis HaMikdash. It is, the world is still not ready. You are going to die, David, without achieving this. But don't worry, I'm promising you, David, that even though you will not be the builder of the Beis HaMikdash, kingship will continue from you. He, one of your children, will be the builder of the Beis HaMikdash. So this is Hashem's promise to David. Even though you want it, and even though you want it so badly. And in Tehillim, in source number 18, Tehillim chapter 132, it says, Im etin, Pasuk, David says in this parak of Tehillim, I am sick with grief. I am sleepless. I will not allow sleep to come to my eyes before I can actually actualize a place, a concrete place for the Beis HaMikdash. This is how much David HaMelech yearns to build the Beis HaMikdash. Okay. The next source in Shmuel, we're not going to read inside, but it is actually the source upon which David actually does realize the real location for the Beis HaMikdash itself. He is given a nevuah by God, the Navi God, who tells him to go up and to bring a sacrifice at this place, the threshing floor of Aravna HaYavusi. And this actually becomes David's symbol, David's direct communication from God through the Navi God. Ah, I get it. Now you're telling me where in this city of the Yavus, where in this capital city that I have designated, will the Beis HaMikdash ultimately stand? And similar to Yaakov Avinu beforehand, look at source 19 in Pasuk Chavalef, Vayomar Aravna Madua Ba'adami HaMelech Alavdo, Vayomar David Leknos Me'imcha Es HaGorem, Livnos Mizbeach LaHashem. So those same words, Leknos and Mizbeach LaHashem, are here. And David, like Yaakov Avinu, understands that in order to truly lay claim to this area and to truly make a stake, stake his claim on this area, you have to purchase it. Now, of course, in our time, halavai, it should be so easy that we indisputably would be the owners of Yerushalayim and the Makom Habayis if we just wrote out a check. But clearly, that is not our reality, and unfortunately, we, unlike David, unlike, our avos, cannot just write out a check and have it as clearly our own. And then, of course, but before we understand that the journey comes to a close, we have to actually talk about a little bit of it. Even though he was heartbroken that his decree, his ideal makom, would be Yerushalayim, but not the Beis HaMikdash, David, and this is a very interesting sort of out there comparison, similar to Cain, flouts his punishment a little bit. He takes it to the edge. And the Torah tells us that David, not only does he pick Yerushalayim, but he actually starts digging the foundations for the Beis HaMikdash. God says no, but he does this. And then, not only does he dig the foundations, he starts hiring the artisans who are going to build the Beis HaMikdash, the architects. He starts amassing all of the materials. He even sets into motion the Mishmarot and the Ma'amadot. Like, he designates how the shifts of Kohanim and Leviim are going to function in the Beis HaMikdash. So here we have him skirting the edge of God's no. God said no, but David is so desperate and so yearning to fulfill this mitzvah, to build the Beis HaBechira, and to finally reveal Jerusalem in all of its glory to the world, that he sort of doesn't take no for an answer. And then, in section number 6, when the journey is complete and Shlomo HaMelech does succeed in building the Beis HaMikdash, look at this interesting pasuk from Divrei HaYamim. Paragimel Pasuk Aleph, Vayachel Shlomo Livnos Es Beis Hashem B'Yerushalayim. Shlomo is given credit for completing the building of the Beis Hashem. Bahar HaMoriah, Asher Nera L'David Avihu, Asher Heichin Bimkom David B'Goran Arnon HaYavusi. That was what we skipped in the source before. David HaMelech was sort of given all the credit. It was David who purchased the threshing floor of Arnon HaYavusi. It was David who established Yerushalayim, and it was merely Shlomo who finishes his achievements. Now, it would be great if I could end this year just by saying, and so the journey to Jerusalem is complete because Shlomo HaMelech succeeds and he built the Beis HaMikdash. But as we well know, he built the Beis HaMikdash, it stands for a couple hundred years, and then it's destroyed. And then another Beis HaMikdash is built, and then it's destroyed. So the reality of our shir is that it's not over, because the journey to Jerusalem is not over. And the question then becomes, in a sense, it becomes very depressing. So we waited breathlessly for 3,000 years for Yerushalayim to be discovered, and then another couple years for the Beis HaMikdash to finally be revealed to the world, and then we're back to ground zero. We're back to where we started. And that actually is the answer. How do we re-enter Jerusalem? Now that it was revealed to us, now that we do know where it is, how do we get back in there? How do we build the Beis HaMikdash again? How does that happen for us? And the answer is similar to the way we started, in the development of ourselves in the same way. The mitzvot bein adam l'makom, the mitzvot bein adam l'chaveiro. In fact, look at source number 23, the Talmud Bavli, which talks about why the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, why the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Mikdash rishon mipnei macharav, mipnei shlosha dverim shahayu ba, avodah zarah, gila arayas ushvich hasamim. Bnei Yisrael had failed. They had failed in their mitzvot bein adam l'makom, they were worshipping avodah zarah. They failed in their mitzvot bein adam l'chaveiro, gila arayas ushvich hasamim. Aval mikdash sheni shahayu osim b'torah mitzvot z'gmilas chasadim mipnei macharav. It was a better society then, this by mikdash sheni. But why was it destroyed? Mipnei shahayu sabos denaf klinam. So again, we revert back to the beginning sin of Adam, the beginning sin of Cain. We're back to the beginning where we started, and that becomes the answer. How do we re-enter? We have to get rid of the qualities of sinas chinam. We cannot hate our brother. Hashem Arachi Anochi, yes. The answer is yes. We are responsible for one another. We have to love each other. There can't be sinas chinam. And as Rav Kook so magnificently says, there needs to be ahvas chinam. We need to be mitaking these ills that existed from time immemorial. And we have to show that we too are worthy of entry into Jerusalem. And yet now, post the destruction of the two Batei Mikdashot, and now, today, May 17th, 2009, after not only the destruction of the Batei Mikdashot, but after 1948, after 1967, I mean, we particularly stand at a very tenuous time in history when literally Yerushalayim is on the negotiating table. The question is, what can we do? And the answer is, we must, first of all, necessarily see ourselves on this journey as well. This is not some biblical journey of holy men before us. This is our journey too. We have responsibilities too. And what do the Nevi'im Ladoros tell us? Source number 21, Yeshayahu. V'karu lahem am ha-kodesh l'ule Hashem. V'lach, Hashem says, and to you, Yerushalayim, yikarei drusha, irlo ne'ezva. Another name for Yerushalayim is Jerusha, the city that is sought after, the city that is sought out. What is Yeshayahu telling us, Lidoros? He's saying, how do you re-enter Jerusalem? How do you recapture Jerusalem? How do you establish yourselves in Jerusalem beyond a shadow of a doubt with no detractors? Jerusha. You must be the seekers of Jerusalem. You must treat Yerushalayim with this breathless pursuit. You must try to uncover it. You must try to discover it. You must connect yourselves to it. And that is when Yerushalayim will be ir lo ne'ezva, when Yerushalayim will not be abandoned. Yirmiyahu similarly says, look at the second part of the pasuk in source 22. Ki nidacha parulach. Yerushalayim here is not called Jerusha, not called sought after, but it is called nidacha. It is called the discarded city, the forgotten city. Zion, Yerushalayim, ki dorish imah. When is Yerushalayim bona ezva? Yeshayahu tells us, when we are dorish it, when we seek it, when we are breathlessly pursuing it, when we're trying to maintain it. When is Yerushalayim called Nidacha, discarded? When none of us, Dorish Eima, when none of us could care less about it, when none of us are trying desperately to re-enter it. Now, in verse number 24, I quote a piece of tefillah which really encapsulates this feeling, this extra feeling that we must have. Matovu Ohalecha Yaakov, we say every morning, yes, the tents, and the tents of Yaakov, the tents of Bnei Yisrael in the desert, the tents of Avraham Avinu, they're all good. And we too, in America, and even in Israel, we live in tents because this is only temporary. None of us will deny the miracle of 1948 or 1967. Of course, it was in Neis Galoy in our time. We saw it, right? But none of us will deny the fact that this is not the Yerushalayim that we dreamed of. This is not our ideal, where we have to take our life into our hands every time we get onto a bus, where the Har HaBayis is so clearly not our own, right? This is not the Yerushalayim. We are still in Ahalim. We are still in Mishkanos, okay? Matov Ohalecha Yaakov. It's good. Mishkanosecha Yisrael. Yeah, Mishkanos and Ahalim. That's how we live. It's good. We have a good life. We have a Torah life. But it's not good enough. Va'ani berov hastecha avol beisecha. But I, because this is my journey, this is the journey of Eli Levi, this is the journey of all of you today, every day, every morning when we see this, we, with your great mercy, God, we want to enter, what? Beisecha, your permanently built bayis. Not an ohel, not a mishkan, a bayis. We want to worship you in the heichal, in the permanently built palace. We will conclude with Tehillim Kafchaf Beis, which was written by David HaMelech, and which really is not merely a description of an ideal Yerushalayim, but it is actually a gift which David gives us, in which he too gives us direction. He answers, he helps to answer the question of how do we re-enter Yerushalayim? How do we go on this journey, and how do we bring the journey to its final completion? Pasuk Aleph, Parakhaf Chapiz, Shir HaMelech to David, Samachti Ba'omim Li Beis Hashem Melech. David says, this is a personal journey. Ba'omim li, like we said in the Matova prayer, ani baruch hasecha, here he's talking about himself. He's talking about a fantasy, a daydream that he has. It's my journey, it's my dream. And this, of course, he doesn't live to actually walk into Beis Hashem Melech. He does not get to walk into the Beis HaMikdash. It's only his son, Shlomo HaMelech, who does. He says, I am elated, I am thrilled, I am happy. In the day when they will say to me, we can enter God's house. Omdos hayu raglinu b'sha'ar rayach Yerushalayim. Here's a new architectural metaphor, the metaphor of the gates. We are standing at the gates of Jerusalem. Just like Avraham Avinu was standing at the gates. How did he get up the mountain? Unlike Bnei Yisrael, who tried to get up the mountain after him. How does he reveal this place? How does David HaMelech tell us that we can unlock the gates to Yerushalayim that we today stand in front of? Yerushalayim habnuya ki'ir shechubra la yachzav. The answer is that Yerushalayim must be a city of peace. Yerushalayim is endowed with this power of creating unity, but we ourselves must be at peace in order to reveal its unity. This is those mitzvahs ben adam v'chaviro that we were talking about all along, the prerequisite on the journey to enter Jerusalem. It has to be a city, shasham alu shvatim, shivtei ka, edus l'Yisrael, lahudus l'shem Hashem. All the shvatim together, not warring factions, with no tribal rivalry. We have to come together to acknowledge God. And here, what does he say? He says, Yerushalayim is not just a city for Jews. This is a city that will be the seat of the throne of justice. This will, Yerushalayim in its ideal, in its greatest glory, will be the seat of the Supreme Court justice of the world, of all of the world, for all of humanity. Kisos Levi's David, it will be the seat of political power for all of the world, with the Beis David, the true Melech, ruling for everyone. And here, Pasuk Vav, this is the linchpin of the entire parak of Tehillim, and then of this entire shir. Sha'al u'shlom Yerushalayim ishlayu ahavayach. How do we bring the journey to Yerushalayim, to its completion? How do we re-enter Yerushalayim? Yes, of course, we have to improve our mitzvot bin adam l'makom, improve our mitzvot bin adam l'chaviro. But the answer is, like Yirmiyahu told us, like Yeshayahu told us, Sha'al u'shlom Yerushalayim, you've got to daven for it. You've got to pray. You've got to beg Hashem, I want to enter. I want the gates of Yerushalayim to be opened to me, Li, and me. This is my journey too. This is not just the journey of David HaMelech and Shlomo HaMelech. This is my journey too. But what does he say to us, David HaMelech? Yishlayu Ahavayach. He gives us a blessing. He says, the lovers of Jerusalem, if you pray for Yerushalayim, I promise you that you will be zocha to peace yourselves. So if we daven for Yerushalayim, we too will be zocha to the peace of Yerushalayim. Thank you very much.